In a world where there is a scourge across the land, taking the very life breath of the people. A world rife with snoring. One man and one show stand tall in the battle against sleep apnea. That man is Richard Webb. That show is the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. And the time is now.
Good morning. This is your host, Richard Webb, on the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show here on AM 1560. In studio this morning is Brian Gaydon from Phillips Respironics. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Great. On this beautiful, sunny Houston morning, Brian's going to be helping answer and talk about some sleep and CPAP issues. Today's show, we're going to try to address full-face masks for our listening audience. As you may or may not know, since we started the broadcast, we have our shows available to listen to on the Monitor Medical website. You can go back and listen to all the prior episodes. And we also have them available on podcast for listening, for your listening pleasure, as they say. So today we're going to talk about several items, but we're going to kind of focus a little bit more on full face masks. But before we get started, Brian, you and I were talking about the Stop Bang sleep apnea screening tool for people that might have a sleep disorder. You had told me about this, and it asks a series of yes-no questions. Do you snore loudly? Do you feel tired or fatigued? Has anyone seen you stop breathing during your sleep? Question four, do you have high blood pressure? Is your BMI more than 35? Are you over 50? Do you have a neck circumference of greater than 15 3/4 inches? And unfortunately for us, are you male? And in this questionnaire, if you answer three of the eight questions yes, that's a bad sign. You're high risk for OSA.
Well, that is true. However, you know, it also helps us to understand how severe the disease might be. One of the advantages that you have with the Stop Bang questionnaire as opposed to some of the others that are available is that it really focuses on more of the objective measures. In other words, you know, it's easier to tell if you have high blood pressure. That's a, you know, something that you can measure pretty directly. It's easier to tell if you have a high BMI or whether your neck size is, you know, 16 or any of those things, where other questionnaires tended to focus on things that were very subjective to the patient, things like how tired you were or how likely you are to fall asleep or become drowsy in certain situations. And one of the things that is true about people with sleep disorders, especially sleep-disordered breathing like sleep apnea, is that people grow accustomed to being that way. And so if you ask a person...
Grow accustomed to being tired.
Yeah, they grow accustomed to being tired all the time. And so when you ask them, you know, today, well, how tired are you when you do these things, their answer may often be, well, I'm not very tired, when in fact they are. They're just used to being that tired, and so that's how they feel all the time. And so they're generally unaware of how much it's impacting their life until, of course, they get treatment and things get a lot better.
I know that a lot of people say, well, I'm older now, so I'm supposed to be tired. I'm not supposed to sleep well because I'm over 50, I'm over 60. And I tell them it's not always the case. I mean, you still need to sleep. You still need to get your rest. And many times people live in denial that they might have sleep apnea. And we just see this time and time again because if you look at the nature of the Stop Bang questionnaire, and it asks those simple questions about snoring and being tired. I mean, you can snore and not have sleep apnea. You can be tired and not have sleep apnea, but they are often indicators.
Yes, there's a very strong correlation between those two things. There are a small number of people that snore, but do not have any kind of sleep disordered breathing. But it's a pretty high correlation between those that snore and have sleep apnea. When you add in all of those other things that you mentioned, you know, obviously the more check marks in those boxes where you've answered yes, it becomes much more likely that you have some form of disease, and that and the more you have, the more likely it is to be severe.
One of the questions on the Stop Bang questionnaire about sleep apnea is BMI. And BMI is one of those terms that for a long time was sort of hidden in the doctor's progress notes when you went to see your physician. But BMI or basal...
body mass index.
I'm sorry. I was thinking the other BMI. The body mass index is a relationship of your the size of the body, the weight, and really what is too high or too low of a number.
On the body mass index? Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose there's a little bit of variability there. Typically, people are considered to be morbidly obese with a BMI greater than 40. However, there is some pretty good correlation that BMIs less than 40 can also have sleep apnea. So in terms of deciding what BMI should be for ruling out or minimizing the likelihood of having OSA, I would say, unless you're less than 30, you should probably consider.
It's the weight divided by the height in inches times a number of 703, which is an
interesting number. That calculates out a body surface area.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it gives you a number. And I know that a lot of times when you go to the physician's office, they always put you on a scale and they measure your height. And I think that what they're doing is they're slipping into the background and into the fine print and saying what your body mass index is to see if you're the number's too high.
There are very helpful tools online. If you just go online and look, do a search for body mass index, it'll allow you to plug in your weight and your height, and it'll give you a number pretty quickly.
So we were talking about the stop bang in the stop bang questionnaire, and the availability of it for people. And you can take it for someone that you know, or a spouse, or someone who's kind of unwilling to assess the fact that they actually might have the tendencies towards having obstructive sleep apnea. People may not realize that they're lending themselves towards being at high risk and all the complications associated with obstructive sleep apnea. So you can find the stop bang, and we'll put it on our website for people to reference, but it is a sleep apnea screening tool. It's not always 100%, but it lends itself. I was saying, if you smoke, if you eat too much fried food, if you're overweight, you have a high tendency towards different types of cancer or hypertension. I mean, they're just
heart
direct
disease.
Heart disease. They're just direct correlations to the problems that you have. So we'll have that on the Monitor Medical website so that people can take that sleep apnea screening tool.
And to get back to what you said earlier, Richard, people that believe or kind of live in this stream of their life that being tired, or as you get older, being tired more is normal, and it really isn't. If you get proper sleep, the proper amount of time in bed, and you don't have a sleep disorder, you shouldn't be tired. It shouldn't really interfere at all with your day-to-day life. Now, everybody has that situation where, you didn't get a good night's sleep one night here or there, but if this is something that's chronic and ongoing, you really should. I would encourage you, if you're out there and that happens to you, to go see someone and seek some information about how a sleep disorder could be impacting your life.
What is your opinion of taking naps in the afternoon?
Well,
obviously, if you're tired, you're going to fall asleep. But do you think people should schedule them in and take the power naps?
Some people, if they have a disease like narcolepsy, they really need to do that. For most people, though, a nap can be very helpful. We say that getting 8 hours of sleep a day is kind of your target, 7.5 to 8 hours. And sometimes you can't get all that at one period in the middle of the night. So if you have to get it during a nap during the day, well, that's better than not getting it at all. Preferentially, you'd be getting it all in one setting in the middle of the night. A nice thing to remember about naps, though, is the power nap does seem to be better. So
power nap being
20 to 30 minutes. Try not to nap for so long in the afternoon that you will hit the deeper stages of sleep, because that can actually make you feel more groggy when you sleep for more than 20 or 30 minutes. Your body tends to want to hit some of these deeper stages of sleep.
And then when you wake up, stay down in the deep sleep.
So when you wake up, you don't feel as refreshed. A lot of times a power nap, 20 or 30 minutes, can really give you a lot of get a lot of that sleep pressure, that fatigue, that feeling of being overwhelmingly tired can go away for several hours if you get that.
I always caution people that are starting on CPAP therapy that when they start and if they intentionally lay down to take a nap, I say, go ahead and put the mask on.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, of course, your machine's in the bedroom and you fall asleep in the lounger in front of the TV set watching the football game at halftime or something. But in general, we always tell people, if you're going to lay down to sleep intentionally, put your positive air pressure mask on, because even when you're napping, you're going to start choking and obstructing.
That's true. Anytime you fall asleep, as soon as those muscles relax, your tendency to have your airway collapse or narrow and cause that obstruction, that happens.
Power naps. That's interesting. I guess we'll be encouraging everybody to get out there and take a little 20-minute snooze in the afternoon. I know my wife comes home from work a lot of times, and she'll lay down and she'll take a few minutes and she'll wake up refreshed. And if she lays down and falls asleep for an hour, she may be asleep when I come in the door, and she's like,
right.
Oh, I could have slept probably through the whole night.
You know, it's interesting because our sleep and wake and many of the other things that happen to us on a day-to-day basis are impacted by our circadian rhythm, which is tends to take a natural dip in the early to middle afternoon. And so all of you out there listening have probably at one point or another had an experience where you're working in your office or you're doing something and you're just profoundly sleepy. You're wondering how you're going to get through the next couple of hours. You're fighting falling asleep with every moment, and you promise yourself, I'm going to go home and I'm going to go to bed early and I'm going to take a nap when I get home and I'm going to feel better. But you get home and all of a sudden you're not tired anymore. Mm-hmm. That sleepiness has gone away. So some folks will just dip, have that natural desire to be asleep in the early afternoon. And if it's possible, you know, a power nap of 20 to 30 minutes, while you may lose that 20 or 30 minutes of productivity during the day, it'll buy you an extra couple of hours that would be far better than just fighting drowsiness for the rest of the afternoon.
You're listening to the CPAP show here on AM 1560 The Game. Give us a call with your questions on sleep disorders at 713-439-1560. We'll be back in a few. Adele did pretty well at the Grammys.
Absolutely.
This is your host, Richard Webb, on the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show here on AM 1560. We're taking your calls, 713-439-1560. This morning, my guest this morning is Brian Gaydon from Philips Respironics. Brian is a specialist in both respiratory and sleep with many years of experience, and I always enjoy having him on the show to talk about the real-life scenarios of people that have sleep disorders and problems that they might have. So, Brian, we were talking about the stop bang, and it's just those words, S-T-O-P-B-A-N-G, two words, and the ability to take that questionnaire to kind of give you a guidance to say, yeah, you probably have a sleep disorder. And I think that's really helpful for those people. I can think of people that I've met that said, I don't know that I have it. I don't seem to do this, but you know, the spouse sleeps in a different bedroom and they know they snore loudly. I think the little questionnaire kind of helps them say, whoops, if I'm getting all these points right, then I probably have an issue.
Yeah, and the issue isn't just in a nuisance. Oftentimes we think of snoring and everybody's got their favorite, you know, granddad or uncle story about how they snore like a chainsaw or snore like a camel and keep the house awake. And it seems to be kind of a running funny joke, but the reality is there are serious health consequences associated with sleep apnea, obstruction, and long-term, you know, problems if you leave this untreated. So it's not just a matter of convenience. You're really taking care of the health, your health for the long term if you get this treated.
One of the things that we wanted to make sure we talked about today was full face masks. And as my co-host Jason Rod, normally we talk about the five different general styles of mask: nasal pillows, nasal cushion, full face mask, hybrid mask, and oral mask. And they're all variances of the same thing. They're a mask over the nose or mouth or both,
right,
that create a not a seal, but a force of air that stays where you want it to go.
Yes. The idea, obviously, with positive airway pressure or PAP therapy is to act as a splint, a pneumatic or an air splint to keep the airway open. And so we've got this CPAP machine, this device that generates pressure, and we have to find some way to attach that to the airway so that it can keep the airway pressurized. And CPAP masks or interfaces are the way that we do that. As you said, there are masks that go just over the nose, we refer to those as nasal masks, or sometimes in the old school way, the nasal triangle masks, because they tend to have that triangle shape. Newer generation stuff like pillows that fit just in the end of the nose have become quite popular. The full face mask, though, has some advantages that the others don't if you need to have a full face mask, in that a full face mask covers the nose and the mouth. So if you have difficulty or obstruction in your nose where you can't breathe well out of your nose, you will end up opening your mouth while you sleep at night. You may do that during the day as well. And if that's the case, you're going to need to have some way to seal that mouth so that when you put the pressure on, it just doesn't, your mouth doesn't open up and blow out your mouth, which will make it awfully dry and uncomfortable. If you've ever had that experience before, it's not fun.
There are a lot of people out there that are listening that might have a nasal mask or nasal pillow style mask. And we were talking before the broadcast, talking about the benefits of a full face mask and why somebody would want to consider a full face mask, or what kind of issues that they might be having that would lend them towards having that.
Yeah. And that's first and foremost, if you're what we call an obligate mouth breather, which is you have to breathe with your mouth because of severe nasal obstruction, or maybe you have severe allergies that you just can't breathe well out of your nose. Obviously, you need something that will allow you to cover your mouth. Some people have a tendency at night when their muscles relax for that jaw to relax as well, and so it'll pop open during therapy. And if that happens, then you have a nasal mask and not a full face mask, then what'll happen is the pressure, the flow from the nasal mask will just, you know, run right out the bottom side out of your mouth, and it'll lead you to a nasty dry mouth and sore throat in the morning. So if you need to have both your mouth and your nose covered, where you can get the pressure from both sides, where you can eliminate that leak out of the mouth, then the full face mask is certainly the way to go.
You had mentioned something that's a big problem for people that have sleep disorders, is that they tend to, I say over their lifetime, they begin to open their mouth. I don't think you watch a baby sleep. Most of the time they close their mouth and they breathe through their nose. And I think over time, when you have a sleep disorder, you learn to lay back and gape, as you see this picture. It looks like a dead person with their mouth going, or gaping, I guess is the technical term, and the loud noises that come forth from the mouth, and the snoring and the choking and stuff. And those are the people that I think someday they can learn to, as my mother would say, someday they'll learn to keep their mouth shut.
Right.
But obviously when you start on PAP therapy, you can't start it right away.
Well, one of the things that's also true about sleep apnea, and I'll give you kind of a mental image to think about here, is if I took you outside, even though it's a lovely day today, and I grabbed you and pushed your head under the water in a pool and kept you there till you were just about to drown, when you popped your head back out of the water, you wouldn't take a deep breath with your nose. You'd gasp for air with your mouth. And so people that have sleep apnea have that experience. They're gasping for air in the middle of the night. And they use their mouth to breathe like that, and oftentimes it'll take them a little while to retrain to stop doing that. Sometimes you'll run into situations where because the amount of pressure that it takes to keep your airway open may be very high for some patients, that putting a nasal mask on and pressurizing the airway, when you try to breathe out, your mouth will pop open to relieve that pressure because it's so difficult to breathe against. And that's where either a full face mask or alternatively, something like BiPAP or something with Flex would be helpful as well.
I know for a long time the providers, the doctors, the sleep labs, I was personally, and I think a lot of people were personally against full face masks because there was a fear factor of covering the mouth when you sleep.
Yes.
And a lot of people would put that on, and you know, you see their eyes get real big as the mask is going over their face, and the phobia or the concern is, what if I lose power? Am I going to suffocate?
And all of the full face masks that are out there now have it's like a safety valve built into it. So if you lose power, that will open a flap on the mask so that you'll vent to the outside room, so you'll be able to breathe. You won't suffocate.
You know, you had mentioned dry mouth, and I think back about waking up in the middle of the night, and sometimes that's before you even get on PAP therapy, and you're waking up in the middle of the night with a real dry, parched throat. It's oftentimes due to the fact that you're breathing through your mouth because you have an obstructive that's just looming right there around the corner. You're about to choke.
Yeah, well, you're breathing out of your mouth, and the other thing that happens is, particularly when you snore, we kind of made the joke earlier that snore, I guess violently, for lack of a better word, that's really hard on the upper airway. And so people that have that oftentimes will wake up with, you know, nasal congestion or a sore throat just because they're beating their airway, you know, by snoring so loud and so hard and gasping for breath that it can cause those problems in the morning that tend to go away throughout the day. And then You know, you only seem to get those things at night. And if that's the case, if that's something that the listeners out there have experienced, that would be a good thing to go talk to your physician about.
Anatomy and physiology, I think sometime it might be good to get someone who's experienced in the upper airway, an ENT doctor or something, because one thing to take into consideration with positive air pressure therapy is the size and shape of the not the outside of the nose, unfortunately, but the inside of the nose, and whether or not Jason's always talking about deviated septums, which in our business is a big concern. And there are so many people that when you talk to them and you're putting this positive air pressure mask on their face, that they don't even tell you that, by the way, I can't breathe through my nose.
Right.
That it's completely blocked, and that's why all day long I walk around with my mouth open. And obviously these are the people that we're gonna have to just say, you're just gonna have to use this positive air pressure mask.
Yeah, well, if you've ever had the pleasure, as I have, of going to an ENT doctor to have your nose looked at, you'll find that those passages on each side of your nose are actually very small, even mm-hmm. normally. And so it doesn't take a lot of obstruction or deviation to really dramatically decrease the amount of, you know, space that you have there to breathe out of. And so if that's the case and you can't breathe well or anything causes that to narrow or become worse, it's going to make it awfully hard to breathe out of your nose, and certainly won't be any better if you're trying to breathe on PAP therapy, particularly if you're trying to adjust to it as a new patient.
And I think that it all ties into why people breathe at nighttime with their mouth closed. And it's interesting is that for these same people, during the day, they don't walk around breathing through their mouth.
That's true.
Although, unless you perhaps walk up a flight of stairs and you're a bit out of shape, you might breathe through your mouth. But you're trying to breathe. You're trying to bring in more air.
Yeah, well, we are designed to breathe comfortably out of our nose. That's the way physiologically we're designed to do. Typically, you're only going to breathe out of your mouth either if something's preventing you from breathing out of your nose, or if your flow demand, the amount of ventilation that you have to take in, is just more than the nose can do. Athletes sometimes, you'll see that, will breathe out of their mouth, or people that are exercising or that sort of thing. But we like to breathe out of our nose. That's the way we're designed. That's the way we heat and humidify the air. The mouth is capable of doing that, but it's not the most efficient way to do it.
You know, there's the nasal strips. You mentioned the athletes that they wear those, and a lot of people don't know why that they wear those. And I think you alluded to the fact that the nasal strips, and Breathe Right is one of several brands. There's a number of brands that Breathe Right is the one that people most recognize. And they're basically a Band-Aid with a flexible plastic strip inserted into the Band-Aid material so that when it goes across the bridge of the nose, and some people put it on too high so it doesn't get any benefit, and some people put it on too low, but you have to just put it right into where the cartilage of the nose is held open. But you're trying to accomplish the same thing. Dr. Spear is one of the guests that we have on the show every once in a while, and he was the first that I ever saw years ago that occasionally would have somebody wearing CPAP and a Breathe Right nasal strip.
Right. Yeah, what it does is it any help at all in kind of opening that passageway can dramatically improve the flow and the ease with which you can breathe through your nose. And so you'll see athletes do that. I've seen patients and people that'll do that while they sleep at night. You see patients with or people with colds or allergies sometimes will do that just because you don't have to open it much to make a big difference.
That's a good point. It is a physics principle, and a small narrowing of the airway due to tissue swelling, small narrowing due to overly dry. And we always hearken on people to make sure they're using their heated humidifiers, and I'm a big believer in heated wire to maintain the warmth and the humidity to prevent the swelling, because it's not swelling like bigger muscles. It's swelling like reducing their airway, and it causes them to choke.
Yeah, it comes narrow like a thin little drinking straw, and it's awfully hard to get air through that.
You're listening to the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. I'm here with Brian Gaydon from Philips Respironics on 1560 The Game. Call us in a few minutes, 713-439-1560. Welcome back to the CPAP Sleep Specialist Show. I'm your host, Richard Webb, here on AM 1560, The Game. I have Brian Gaydon with Philips Respironics in the house with me this morning. We're talking about sleep disorders, positive air pressure, and the theme today is full-face masks, and we're talking about the kind of positive air pressure mask you sleep with that covers the nose and the mouth with the intention of allowing you to breathe better breathers club. You know, Brian, a long time ago, we used to put everybody in a nasal style over the nose. And if they started breathing through their mouth, we would say you need a chin strap.
Yep.
And for those out there who don't know, a chin strap is a loop of elastic material that circles the head from top of the head underneath the chin, which helps to force the mouth closed, but so oftentimes it pushes the mouth back, and it really doesn't seal the mouth. That's a misnomer to think that with that loop around your head that you're absolutely not going to breathe, because you can clench your jaw, and the air can still come out your mouth.
Yeah, what it does, the chin strap is primarily designed just to help you when you're not aware of it. If your muscles relax and your jaw tends to slack open, it's not going to prevent you from opening your mouth at all. That wouldn't be a good idea. But it can help if you're just training or you're early in therapy and you're trying to relearn how to sleep with your mouth closed. It can help you do that. Having said that, if you just can't breathe out of your nose, I don't know that shutting your mouth is going to be a good idea.
You know, we've had people that ask us to give them a super, super strong chin strap so they won't have to wear their mask because they breathe with their mouth open and make a lot of noise at night. And I say, well, you're trying to kill somebody by closing their mouth when they can't breathe through their nose.
Yeah, you don't want to go too far. One thing that I think if you're one of those people out there, you're having this problem breathing out of your nose, go see your ENT. Those guys and gals out there that are able to treat you for all these nasal obstruction and allergy issues, those things have gotten significantly better over the years.
And it's seasonal. It's not always year-round.
Yeah, well, I had very severe nasal allergies. They were really, really impacting my life pretty profoundly, and I got some treatment done, got some turbinate reduction surgery, and then some of the allergy drops that help you become immunotherapy, so you're kind of immune to the allergies, and it made a tremendous difference.
And we talked about the size of the opening of the inside of the nose or the throat that you breathe through, and it doesn't take but a very small reduction, or vice versa, it doesn't take but a very large opening of the airway to allow you to quit choking and
yep.
snoring
yep.
at nighttime.
In fact, that's part of the principle behind positive airway pressure, is if you get the right pressure, even though 12 or 13 may be the pressure, the difference is if you get it exactly right, just opening that airway just that little bit more can make all the difference.
There are a number of manufacturers of positive air pressure therapy, and most of them that make machines make masks. There's a few companies that only make a machine, and there's a few third-party companies that only make masks, or perhaps they go overseas for the lower cost manufacturing ability. But certainly most of the companies make a mask that covers the nose and the mouth, and they come in multiple sizes.
Yes.
Small, medium, large, even extra large.
And multiple shapes. Even Philips Respironics, we make more than one style of full face mask, so that the patient has the opportunity to work with something until they find something that works well for them.
How do they determine what size mask? Because I've had guys that are like 6'5", and they come in and they say, I'm a big guy, I need an extra large mask.
Sure.
But they're... Honestly, without hurting their feelings, their appendages aren't that big.
Yeah, well, the key is to know the landmarks when you're going to fit any type of mask. It's particularly important with a full face mask, but obviously, bridge of the nose for most full face masks is going to be a key point. You're going to want to be able to come around the outside or the sides of the mouth without touching those, and you want to come if you put your finger on your right below your bottom lip, if you touch there, if you can feel teeth below that, then that's probably too high up, too close to the lip. You want to be closer to where there's
with the mask on, you're saying.
Yeah. Well, if you just you push right there, uh-huh. you can tell. Uh-huh. And then when you're on gum line, that uh-huh. that's going to be a better idea of where the bottom of the mask should sit. Now, remember that with a full face mask, the intention is that you're wearing that because your mouth is going to come open at night. So you have to fit that and size that with your mouth open a little bit. Because if you don't do that, if you fit the mask with your mouth closed, then when it comes open, your jaw drops in the middle of the night. It's just going to cause it to leak.
Right, right. When, at Monitor Medical, when we try people, we always make sure that they are wearing their mask and they open their mouth and they're closing their mouth and they're turning their head. So when you get a new product that you've not worn before, it's important to kind of run it through the gamut to see, does it work in every scenario? Can I turn my head? Because some masks only work well when you're perfectly stationary, and you need to make sure that if you turn in bed or you're leaning your head back, that the mask stays on and fits properly.
You know, Richard, that is an excellent point, because it's easy to get any mask to seal if you don't move at all. The problem becomes when you do move. And everybody will adjust positions a little bit mm-hmm. during the course of the night, and that's when you have the leak problem.
And we have a caller. We have John from Buffalo. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good this morning.
I have a question. I travel quite a bit for business, and I wanted to find out if there's a particular machine that is good for carrying around. I use a Respironics System 1 right now, but it's rather big, and I want to find a small one that I can take with me, and it's quite light. When you travel, everything becomes about weight. So is there a particular manufacturer or machine out there that is compact and that has a humidifier built in, and it doesn't come apart in multiple pieces that I have to keep track of or lose things as I travel and might leave in a hotel room? What would you recommend?
There have over the years been several manufacturers, and you have to look at your traveling. You have to look and see, do you need humidification? Obviously, if you don't need humidification, the device that you have comes in half and comes down to a much smaller size. We always say in the company that a CPAP device is about the size of a loaf of bread. Some loaves of bread are a little bit bigger, some loaves of bread are a little bit smaller. But from the traveling perspective of it, there are a few brands out there that that really are all about the smallness. But unfortunately, when you add on a humidification device, you've just doubled the size of the machine, because humidification devices for positive air pressure machines work on airflow over surface area. And if you have surface area the size of a thimble, or surface area over the size of a plate, you're going to get a lot more humidification over the size of the plate. So first question for people that travel is, do you need the humidification? And the second question is, do you travel to areas where there is a lot of power outage? You know, we have a lot of salespeople that travel to Las Vegas or Atlanta. That's not going to be a problem. But if you're a sales guy and you're traveling to Africa or Russia, to a remote destination to work in an oil platform, or even in areas where there's potential power outages, batteries are an issue, which is really a large add-on for the size of the device. Currently, the smallest device that is a new product, and there are some old products out there, the newest product is something called the Transcend. And the Transcend device is the smallest machine that we carry, and it does have the ability to add a battery to it. And probably what makes it attractive is that the Transcend does not have a humidifier. It has something that's been around a long time, but it's really kind of new to CPAP therapy. It has a heat and moisture exchanger, which is a little cartridge that picks up your moisture from your breathing and your warm air as you exhale. So and the company has made some modifications. It was originally designed to wear on the top of your head, but now they have it to where you can put it on a nightstand. And we were setting up some people here in Houston for an engineering firm, and we were configuring them because they were spending a lot of time driving over to Saudi Arabia. And so we were able to get them to the smallest tube, the smallest mask. Their whole thing was, what is the smallest that I can get? And the Transcend and a small fabric mask, a 4-foot hose, and we were getting them set for air travel. So really, it's looking at the configuration to where you're going to use it. Does that help, John? And you're using the Philips Respironics System 1. That is a relatively small device compared to, if you've worn CPAP for a while, 5 years ago, these machines were three times that big.
Yeah, I have one of the original, the original machine I started off on was a Respironics machine, and it was about twice the size of a loaf of bread, and it weighed twice as much.
Well, it's all in the size of the humidifier, because you can't make that any smaller unless you're going to do without humidification.
No, I definitely need humidification.
Well, thanks.
Sure.
Thank you for calling, Brian, or John, sorry. You're listening to the CPAP show here on AM 1560. We'll be back after this brief intermission. Stevie Wonder in studio. Oh, Stevie had to leave just that quick. Sorry, y'all. This is a CPAP sleep specialist show here on AM 1560 The Game. This is your host, Richard Webb. In studio with me is Brian Gayden for the last segment of the show. And today we're kind of dedicating a lot of talk about full face masks and what works well and why people should wear a full face mask to help their obstructive sleep apnea. And, Brian, we were talking about the benefits of the preventing oral dryness and preventing or hopefully reducing the swelling in the upper airway. What do you see about is a bigger problem, over-humidification or under-humidification in the upper airway, on the nose and the mouth?
Well, under-humidification is the problem. Really, on the other side of that, over-humidification tends to happen when it becomes a nuisance, because you get a lot of water that, mm-hmm. you know, condensates out when that hot air cools off, and it'll collect in the tube or it'll collect in the mask, and in the middle of the night you'll switch positions and get a snoot full of water, which, when that happens to most people, as it, you know, I've had that happen before as well, where you'll not even realize you'll get that face full of water, and you don't want to take the time to you know, clean it out and do all that in the middle of the night. So you just pop the mask off and you stop wearing it. And so
The problem that I see so often is a combination of underhumidification, and because they do get water in the mask and the tube. So what do? They turn the humidifier down or they turn it off altogether.
Yep. And then they wake up with the, you know, one of two things, either the really dry feeling in the throat or a very congested nose. One of the ways that you can tell if you're underhumidified is to remember what the nose is designed to do to begin with, which is to heat and humidify the air before it enters your lungs. And so if you have cool, dry air coming into your nose, your nose is going to respond by sending more blood up into those up into your nose to, you know, warm and humidify that air better. And so adding more blood means congestion and
congestion and less runny air, runny nose. You know, people can't always believe that most often the same symptoms of runny nose is too much moisture going into your nose or really too dry. And I think for most people, it's going to be too dry.
Well, although this doesn't happen a lot in Houston, if you think of maybe we have some listeners in Colorado or the gentleman that just called a moment ago from Buffalo, New York, where you walk outside after you've been inside, you know, in a nice, warm, cozy environment. You walk outside and that really cold, dry air hits you and your nose will congest a little bit. You'll get a little bit of a runny nose. And that's the exact same physiologic thing happening there.
I've been a big advocate in the last, I guess about a year and a half, with the advent of the heated tubing, heated wire tubing that keeps the temperature consistent from the machine to the mask. And what we're trying to really redo is to re-educate people to turn up their humidification devices so that they can get the moisture, so they can prevent the congestion, so that they'll wear their mask. Yep. Everything kind of falls downhill.
It does. It can be a little bit complicated. And when you look at all the different things that have to be right in order for this to work, but get the humidity there. The key that I hear first and foremost all the time is that if the mask isn't right, you're not going to wear the therapy. It doesn't matter how good the humidifier is. It doesn't matter how comfortable the CPAP machine is. If the mask doesn't fit well, if it's not comfortable, people aren't going to wear it. And typically the things that you hear people complain about are pain at the bridge of the nose, strap marks or red marks so that, you know, somebody wakes up in the morning and by the time they get to work, they can still see those residual lines or red spots on their face. And they don't like that.
No. You know, some guys wear it as a red badge of courage, but a lot of women refuse to wear their devices because they're getting marks on their face. I want to cover a few items real quick before we end the show. And I was talking about the heated tubing, and most of the manufacturers have a heated circuit. There's a company called Hibernite that makes an aftermarket tubing that you can add to any machine. And I think that your company, Philips Respironics, is coming out with a heated circuit soon.
Tomorrow. So we will have a new launch of a product tomorrow that will have heated wire capability with it.
Interesting. So that's so good. Today, I had promised in our email blast that we send to people, if you want to sign up for our email, go to our Monitor Medical website, register, and get our emails every week to remind you of the show. And I wanted to specifically talk about the Quattro FX mask that's new from ResMed. It's a new, little bit different shape, relatively new in the last few months. Their motto, ResMed's motto on the mask is less is more. Probably the big change in full face mask is it doesn't have that big bar that goes up over the forehead. It's not for everybody, and that's one of the things about this show is that not everything is meant the same for everybody. But the Quattro FX full face mask frees up the eyes and the face. And that music says we're heading out. Well, Brian, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Happy to be here, Richard.
And we'll look forward to seeing and hearing from everybody next Sunday morning. Go to our website. You can listen to the past episodes. And we are also now on iTunes. You can go to the iTunes store and get your podcast of the prior episodes. So, Brian, you can get yours for your iPad and listen to yourself and say, I should never have said that.
Or think how funny I sound on the radio. It just always seems... seems weird when you hear yourself in that situation.
Stay tuned, and we'll see you back here next Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Central Time.
Yes, sir.
We'll be right back.